Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
This is the ZABEcast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Here we go. Monday, April 20th, 2026. Thank you for downloading. Welcome to Draft Week in the NFL. These are the only 3 days or 4 days you need to get properly prepped for the upcoming NFL draft. I know people have been doing it now for months, but they're just wasting their time. You can pick up now a consensus of here's where we think these guys are going to go, and you can pretty much get all the work you need to get done in 3 days. Hell, you could just show up and watch the TV show on Thursday night, which, by the way, is going to feature a slicker first round. They have shortened the time between draft picks in the first round by a couple of minutes, and it's long overdue. Because it just doesn't need to be as long as it is. So whomever you want your team to take for well-argumented reasons with your buddies and friends on text chats and Reddit boards, that's great. Have fun participating virtually in a theoretical way with the NFL draft. They don't listen to you. They don't listen to me. They do what they do, these teams. And some teams are better at the draft than others over the course of 10, 15, 20 years. The draft and the draft process is evolving as well because the value of certain positions is continuing to evolve. One thing I found that was interesting, and I need to go back and get the list, but I realized that any quarterback that ends up being taken in the second round is usually a complete bag of shit. Like, a quarterback that you regret even drafting. And it's a weird phenomenon because on the one hand, if the guy was any good, like really good as a quarterback, you'd be like, we can't wait till the second round if somebody's going to take him. And so he ends up going in the top 15. Of course, doesn't mean that there aren't busts in the top 15, but as I looked at the history of second round quarterback draft picks, there's like three all time that turned out to be worth a shit. And the rest are horrible reaches and bad ideas dressed up as, yeah, maybe this guy could possibly be the guy. Third rounders tend to have a little bit better success, just anecdotally, maybe because as a third rounder, there's no obligation to play him. So nobody's rushing to jam him in there. So if a third round guy at quarterback ends up being pretty good once a team gets him in their camp, he ends up stealing the job no matter what without you having to push him. It's the second rounders teams get convinced into, yeah, he could be our starter. Like Will Levis, second rounder for the Titans. Woof. The Jets once picked Christian Hackenberg from Penn State in the second round, and he never took a single snap in his NFL career. I got to believe that's a record, that a quarterback drafted second round or higher, they never even thought he was good enough on the Jets to give him a shot. But it sounded like a good idea to somebody one of those years that they ended up taking him. So Ty Simpson is the second quarterback expected to go on Thursday. He's expected to go in the first round, mid to late, We'll see about that. If he drops to the second round, I'm not saying it's a guarantee he's going to suck, but I would say the odds are well against him. So, me as your host, having done virtually no draft prep of meaningful proportion, have not watched anyone's tape, have not done a deep dive on the scouting reports on certain players. I know the basic narrative on some guys. Doesn't matter. I'm going to give you what I consider to be my seven key rules to having a draft that doesn't totally suck. Based on my now 30, let's call it, when did I start really paying attention to the draft? 15 years old. 57 now, that's 32, carry the one, divide by pi. In my 32 years of following the NFL and seeing the dumb shit that teams do and seeing the smart things that other teams do, I have these seven basic rules. Rule number one, only way to win the draft is to have more picks. It's a crapshoot. The more lottery tickets, the better chance of hitting one. Acquire them by hook, by crook, by compensatory picks, by trading down later on in the draft when you don't really need a guy and some other team is dumb enough to scooch up in the second or third round and they flip you an extra second next year, take it, especially for just a scoot down. So have more picks, the only way to win. And also, of the picks you have, always draft as high as possible, which will come to my second point, which is to never trade up. Trading up is this very egotistical notion that a team really likes a guy, wants a guy in a specific round, but they're afraid somebody else is going to take him. It is the most peak FOMO type of pick you can make, and it's not driven by any kind of analytic reality. If you're trading up to get somebody, then you are way too trusting of your own system and your own grading. And let me tell you, your own grading is not that good. It's not that good. You're not that smart. And don't tell me, well, we really like this guy. Like somebody else, for God's sake. Now, there's a couple exceptions. I did note this. The two quarterbacks, I'll tell this to Andy in a second. Two quarterbacks that were trade-ups were Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes in recent vintage. And yeah, they're MVPs. But generally speaking, never trade up. That's rule number two. Rule number three. Remember, like I said, you're not that smart. And your grades aren't that accurate. If everyone's grading system was so good, they would have never let Brock Purdy slip all the way to Mr. Irrelevant. Same thing for Brady. Your grading system is not that good. Nobody's that smart. It's a lottery. Buy more tickets. Rule number four, how to have a draft that doesn't totally suck. Find guys that like football, not guys that like being a football player. There's a massive difference, and it's hard sometimes to really suss out, well, which one is this guy? If you love football, you have a weird, psychotic, obsessive desire to smash your body into pieces to play this game, and you live it, you breathe it, you eat it, you sleep it, you love it. A lot of guys love the fact that they're big and strong and athletic and are now stars and celebrities and can fuck any woman they want in any city they go to, and they're making millions of dollars, of which will mostly be gone, 70% of players broke by the time they're done. Those guys are not good for your team. I would say Odell Beckham Jr. is one of those guys. Did he provide highlights? Yes, he did. He also organized a boat trip for the Giants. Not good. Rule number five, ways to have a draft that won't totally suck. Rule number five, remember that floors are as important as ceilings. Teams don't like to draft guys and then have to tell their fans, well, I know the ceiling doesn't look very high on this guy, but the floor is rock solid. In other words, we know that this guy at this position is highly unlikely to be a bust, and he's going to be a 10-year starter. And there's a lot of value in that. The two names that come to mind are Zach Martin, a guard, picked instead of Johnny Manziel the year that he was coming out. Jerry for the Cowboys desperately wanted Johnny Manziel. His son, Steven, who was running the draft, overruled dad, and they took Zach Martin instead. Zach Martin became a longtime Pro Bowl fixture on that offensive line. Johnny Manziel was a cocaine-addled douchebag. Also, the Redskins once drafted Brandon Sheriff, a guard, very high, like top five or six, and it was considered a reach because you don't really take guards that high, but he was an absolute rock, a stud. And his ceiling might not have been as high as some others, but his floor was up there. And he demonstrated it for a long time. Rule number six, don't let the news cycle run your draft room. Guy gets arrested for something that's relatively minor. Don't knock him down your board unless there's a long history of arrests. And certainly when it comes to salacious PR photos, or not PR photos, but salacious pics that become a buzzworthy news cycle, don't let that affect things. Laramie Tunsil had the bong mask come out hours before the draft, and he fell at least four or five spots. Dumbest thing ever. Lael Collins was wanted to be questioned, not as a person of interest, but just informational background on his ex-girlfriend who had been brutally murdered. Just days before the NFL draft, Lael Collins out of LSU ended up being undrafted when he was easily going to be, at worst, a second rounder. Cowboys ended up signing him once the draft was over, but they got a hell of a steal because everyone just freaked out, like, oh my God, he might have killed his ex-girlfriend. Well, might have, but the police aren't even calling him a person of interest. There's a lot of things that could maybe happen. And I wouldn't say that he deserved to be a first rounder, but I kept saying during that draft, I'm like, why wouldn't a team use a fifth-round pick on him? Because if it turns out that, you know, they find the guy who really killed his ex-girlfriend, you're going to have a fifth-round talent or a second-round talent or better at a fifth-round price. Nobody did. Don't let the news cycle run your draft room. And then finally, rule number seven for having a draft that doesn't totally completely suck, keep the owner busy and distracted at all times. If he wants to be in the draft room, show that he's in command, fine. Make sure that his phone doesn't go anywhere important. Make sure that, you know, he's not really involved in the picking of players. Now, some owners are better than others at, yeah, I'm present, but I'm not telling these guys what to do or how to do it. And then other owners are dipshits like Dan Snyder, who insisted on the Redskins taking Dwayne Haskins. Out of Ohio State, Super Sky Point to Dwayne, rest in peace. And that was that. Don't ever let your owner make your picks. Keep him busy and distracted, if possible. If you do most of those seven rules, I think you're going to have a draft that doesn't totally suck. Still no guarantee because what? It's a crapshoot. And the only way to win is to have more tickets. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. All right, Andy Pollin time on a Monday, and if you can tell a little spring in his step, it's for a good reason. Today, Andy Pollin became a granddaddy for the third time over.
Yes, correct.
Mazel, mazel. Congratulations. Talk to me.
Charlie Noah Pollin. Born in Seattle, so I haven't seen him yet and won't see him for probably a couple of weeks until we go out there. But yeah, very, very excited about that. And first child for my son, Jeremy, and first grandchild for me and his lovely wife, Nicole.
That is fantastic. So did they know it would be a boy or a girl?
They did know it was going to be a boy.
Okay. And Charlie. Mm-hmm. Any Charlies in the extended Poland clan?
No, but this will maybe not surprise you. Do you remember a receiver for Indiana named Charlie Becker who caught big passes late in the season?
Yeah.
Number 80?
Yeah.
I don't know exactly. We haven't gone through all the family connections and why, but that was a contributing factor.
Yes. So Jeremy lobbied to have his first son named after one of the popular players on Indiana's national championship football team.
Yeah, and Nicole went along with it. I mean, usually the wife has the final say in this, so she was on board, and she's a Duke grad. So.
Oh, yes. Wow, how about that? By the way, when Duke got done in by UConn, did Jeremy have to tiptoe lightly around the house? Did you ask him about that? Or does he have free rein to rub it in when her school...
He doesn't rub it in, and I guess they haven't really played since they've been together. They've been together quite a while. They met almost 10 years ago. I don't think there's been like an NCAA tournament game where they've gone to head-to-head. He's taken her to Duke games. She puts up with his Indiana craziness, and I don't know, seems to work.
Okay. Well, good. You know, you could have had a grandchild named Tyreek. Or perhaps Hosea or Mikhail with a K-A-I-L. That'd be Tyreek Tucker, Mikhail Kamara, or Hosea Wheeler, all on the defensive line from last year's Indiana National Championship.
No.
Or Elijah Hardy, R-O-L-I-J-A-H.
Line. And I don't think Fernando was in play, as great as he was.
All right, so it is draft week, Andy, and just wanted to get your quick thoughts on what the Commanders may or may not do this year in the draft.
Well, I don't know how big a factor this Giants trade is going to be, but all the experts you keep hearing is that it's a big drop-off after 10. So they now have 5 and 10. Could they, maneuver? Could they flip one, both? Who knows? But a lot of the speculation has Washington trading with the Jets and moving down to 16 because they need a second-round pick and maybe get a wide receiver later in the draft. Maybe not one of the top wide receivers, but that seems to be the speculation. I think the thinking on this draft has changed a lot from last year, where it was like, oh, made the NFC Championship game. Well, another couple steps here and there, and they can take the next step. I think people realize now it's going to be a while with rebuilding the talent level at this team, and you need players. So I would not be shocked to see them trade down.
Would be happy if they traded down. I don't want to see them trade down because I think you're not that smart. Like, you need the best defensive player available right now to shore up a gaping wound on defense.
True.
You're not smart enough. You're not nimble enough. Nobody's grades are ever as good as they think they are. Like, this is a fucking crapshoot. Okay. So take the most picks you can get and pick as high as you can always.
Well, and I would not be opposed. In fact, I'd like it if they took Jeremiah Love, though that's a running back.
They don't have the luxury of a shiny object. Well, that would be Danny Boy all over again.
Maybe, but you know what's become a very popular term in the NFL these days and what? Not so much in the past?
What?
Explosive plays. Yeah, and so if you've got somebody capable of making an explosive play every now and then, that could make the difference in maybe 3 or 4 wins over the course of the season.
Yeah, but the Giants had Saquon Barkley, and he had multiple 1,000-yard seasons, right. And they didn't do shit with him, even though he was having 1,000-yard seasons.
They really didn't have a quarterback, though. Daniel Jones, 1 year, right? 1 good year?
Correct. Correct. So that would be the argument of, hey, this is why it'd be different with Jaden Daniels, because you got a quarterback and now you got a running back. Right. I don't know. I don't think he's going to last to seven anyway, so you'd have to move up.
Probably.
I think moving up is also a sucker's game as well. Before you came on here, Andy, today, I went through my NFL rules for how to not have a crappy draft, and my second rule is never trade up, because you're not that smart. Picks. But this is the guy we like. We don't want to miss out on the guy we really like. My answer is always, like somebody else.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Bobby Bethard, Hall of Fame general manager, traded up to get Ryan Leaf at 2. How'd that work out?
That's right. Ryan Leaf was a trade-up. Yeah. The history of trading up is replete with utter disaster, and it's usually for quarterback. The two names that in recent memory were worth the trade-up are Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. But Josh Allen was slow coming. He wasn't a hit right away. So it was a little while there. You're like, I don't know. And the Niners traded up for Trey Lance, who was a flat-out bust. But they survive it. They move on. I just think that there's so many guys you could take that your grading system is not as smart as you think it is. So find somebody else to like, because you're basically not going to make a big difference in doing that. Now, I did notice something as I was going through the draft. I was trying to think, because Ty Simpson could end up being a late first round pick at quarterback out of Alabama. First of all, Alabama, aside from recently prior to Jalen Hurts and Tua and then Bryce Young, Alabama had the worst sort of quarterback resume of any power school. Do you ever notice that about Alabama? Even when they were great under Nick Saban, until the very end, they weren't producing pro quarterbacks, period.
No, well, the best quarterback was Joe Namath.
I know,
right. In 1965. The Saban era changed. You know, Saban was one of those guys, defensive guys, run the football, eat up the clock, let your defense win the game. And he changed over in a period of time to become more of a pass-oriented offense. And that's where you saw. And he also had big balls when he at halftime. Oh, yeah. Jalen Hurts, who had been a starter in every single game, lost one game over 2 years. Oh. Take a seat, son. We're going to put the freshman in to win this game. And he did.
Yep. And Tua got it done. So anyway, do you sense the draft is gaining in popularity still, leveling off, or perhaps already on the other side of the shark tank?
No, it comes at the right time of the year. By turning it into an NFL Woodstock, which they have. It's in Pittsburgh this year.
Really what it is. It's a great term, by the way.
Yeah, it's what it is. And so people just show. It's amazing. People show up to watch hours and hours. The draft has always amazed me because, unlike the NBA, well, the NBA has changed too with all the Euros, but unlike the NBA, where you kind of knew most of the players, there's like five guys in every draft that you know, and the rest of them is some defensive lineman from Auburn, and people wig out. Oh, they would have no idea who he was, you know, prior to the draft.
But like you said, it has become an event in which you get to prove your football credentials as a fan by saying, I went to the draft. Yeah. I dressed up in my Seahawks jersey or my Steelers jersey. Look at me. Like, it, you're right. It is very Woodstocky in that regard. Just none of the, you know, free love, sex, drugs, and mud.
Well, I go back. If you look at one of those 30 for 30s, when they used to have the draft at Radio City Music Hall, and the Jet fans were famous for going crazy. They took the tight end.
I love that montage from ESPN. It's
look
so
closely.
Good.
You will see a WTEM mic flag. That's me.
Get out.
I don't know what happened to the audio, but yes, I was there.
I know this, that those clips in that montage with the low ceilings and the very intimate sort of conference room they used to have it and let a limited number of fans in, it just hits me in a way that I'm like, damn, this was in our lifetime that this thing was this small, so to speak.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember the first draft I ever was at was 1990. I don't think there were any fans in there. I think it was just, you know, media and tables with, you know, the teams and then the ESPN set. That's it.
All right. NBA playoffs have begun. There's only been one upset so far. Well, it's actually not over yet. It's we're right now in the fourth quarter. Magic are leading the Pistons as the 8 seed. Pistons trying to get Cade Cunningham reacclimated after his long absence with a collapsed lung. He has 30 points right now with 7 minutes to go. But earlier today on a Sunday, the Celtics destroyed the Sixers without Joel Embiid, 123-91. And the Thunder obliterate the Suns, 119-84. Yesterday, the four NBA playoff games, not only did all four favorites win, they all covered as well. And we might have three out of four win and cover. I saw somebody tweet saying, you know, there ought to be a rule, which is in the first round, if you're the higher seed and you go up 3-0, series is over. Like, that's it. There's no reason to play any more games after that. What do you think of the way the first round is now that they have bloated this thing to the point of 7 games?
Not only that, you have, what, 4 days of play-in games before you get to that? That was a pretty good basketball. But, you know, the old days, the first round was 2 out of 3. You know, yep, it could
best
be
best of three, which – I think we could agree that was a little bit too small.
Okay, right? but part of the drama of the play-in was, for some teams, it was win or go home, which is what makes the NCAA basketball tournament as popular as it is.
But okay, so the Suns are in. They are completely overmatched against OKC. So they're going nowhere, and most of the play-in teams will never go anywhere except for the Heat, who somehow as a play-in team went to the NBA Finals that one year.
Right. I think we as fans are drumming our fingers waiting for the Conference Finals. It's pretty much what it is.
That's a long way coming, by the way.
And also, you got 4 games on Saturday, 4 games on Sunday. How much time can you devote to all this? Can you be that much of an NBA fan that you're going to watch 10 hours a day for 2 days straight?
I watched none of the afternoon games. I was visiting my mom, and then I took a nap in her chair at her place. And then I came home, and I mowed the lawn. And now I'm talking to you, and I'll catch some of tonight's final game between the Blazers and Spurs. Oh, by the way, the new owner of the Spurs, this guy Tom Dundon, is not going to pay a lot for this muffler, as the old Meineke commercial used to say. He wants to pay his head coach about $1.5 million, which is below the low end of $4 million for NBA coaches. I'm thinking he might be onto something, that even these guys that are in the upper stratosphere, are they really worth that much money? Like OKC's coach, Mark Daniel, he's a $4 million a year guy. I don't think it matters.
I think also the ability to fire him and not have to pay off ridiculous amounts of money is very attractive. You can take these unknown guys who are willing to work for that price, and then if it doesn't work out, you go on to the next guy and you hope it works out. But the players are what it's all about. And I believe as, let's see, this is going back. When did Gar Hurd become the coach? I want to say like 2000, 25 years ago.
Gar Hurd, coach of the Wizards.
Wizards, same day. He was hired for $1 million a year then. And Abe Poland said he blew him away in the interview. At the same time, almost simultaneous news conferences, Phil Jackson was taking the Lakers job for $10 million a year. You know, but they had Kobe and they had Shaq. It was a different deal.
January of 2000.
Yeah, 26 years ago. And they had the players, and the Wizards had Wizards players.
Yeah. The Bucks and their owners are going to have to eat the last year of Doc Rivers' contract. Doc signed a 3.5-year deal for $40 million. So that's about $10 million plus per. And he was due to coach next year through 2027. And he sucked he might be the single most overrated coach ever. He has one championship. Hey, how about that? In 27 years. And they inducted him into the Hall of Fame last month.
I think the strength of his personality has really helped him. I've met him once or twice, and I think he's a fine guy, and I think he interviews very well for jobs. And I guess they can find enough players to vouch for him, but it's more so when the owner meets with the coach that really the deal gets done.
Yeah, I think Doc is very accessible and very likable, that understands the media. He was in the media between coaching gigs on ESPN, and that goes a long way. It's a good lesson for life, by the way. You know, be likable. You don't have to be nearly as good.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. And if you're a great coach, you can be a jerk and last a long time. See Knight, Robert Montgomery.
But but eventually, if you're a great coach who's also an ass and an ogre, as soon as your winning slips a little bit, the people with the knives come out of the woodwork.
You know, right. If Knight was still winning titles, Neil Reed and grabbing a student by the wrist wouldn't have mattered.
That's a fair point right there. So if Doc Rivers is overrated, dare I say that some people are now arguing that LeBron James is underrated, had an excellent game one as the Lakers beat the Rockets minus Kevin Durant, needs to be noted. But LeBron did it without Luka Doncic, did it without Austin Reeves, nearly had a triple-double, and got to play 3 minutes, Andy, with his son, Bronny Jr. And that was a nice family moment. Bronny's in the NBA as a make-a-wish for LeBron himself. He played a ton of minutes this year, LeBron. He's 41, and he's still getting it done. Is he in any way underrated?
No, because he's always in the discussion with Jordan. And to me, Jordan is the best player who ever played, period, end of story. So what he's doing at his age, remarkable. There's probably never, no one's come close to his performance at the age of 41 or whatever he is.
Right.
But in terms of total career, just because Jordan played fewer games, sorry, he's the best. There's the difference between wanting to win and refusing to lose. One refused to lose. LeBron has wanted to win. He also wanted to bring his son in, and he achieved enough status. So they said, okay. And his son had enough chutzpah to try and create his own logo. Did you see that? And they turned him down. Yeah.
Bronny wanted his own logo?
Yeah, LB9 or something like that. Yeah.
His own logo should say DNPCD in it. Not play coach's decision. Okay, well, yeah, there you go. Look, LeBron has had a phenomenal career, obviously. He's up in the pantheon of all-time NBA greats. He has always been overexposed, overmarketed, just too much at times for me to take. I've rolled my eyes at things LeBron has said and has done over the years, and the amount of times that he has blown my skirt up, so to speak, with stuff he's done on the court is very few. Jordan used to thrill even casual fans all the time because he had a telegenic nature of his game that reached out through the screen and grabbed you and said, "Are you watching this shit?"
Right. Well, also, he ran the practices with his intensity. Not that LeBron doesn't play hard, not that LeBron doesn't keep himself in phenomenal shape, but Jordan was saying, okay, this is the way I'm doing it, and I'm bringing you all along with me. The fact that he punched Steve Kerr in the head in a practice is unbelievable because we see that Kerr has gone on to be an incredible coach along the way. So he I'm sure, was not acting like a jackass in practice, but Jordan's intensity was so much that that's what he did to a, must have been a great teammate.
Yeah. On the hockey front in DC, we've got maybe an awkward standoff forming between Ovi and Ted when it comes to one more season. Ovi saying on Tuesday of last week, "I hope this is not my last game. I don't think it is. Doesn't want to play for anybody else. Made $9.5 million this year. Caps really only want to pay him about half that for one more year. My stance is just fucking pay him $10 million if he wants to come back. He was productive this year. And, you know, this is a once in a lifetime thing. This is not the time to get cheap. And don't tell me about, well, it's going to hurt our free agent market being able to buy another player. Shut up. Pay the man. What about you?
I think the problem is he wants 2 years.
Oh, really?
I think that's what's going on. I've also been told that the playoffs are a different story. And if they get into the playoffs, which is no sure thing next year, his game doesn't really work as well. Okay.
So let's say he is asking for two, and I don't know where you're getting this from because I've done a little bit of Googling on it. I haven't seen anyone say he's reading.
I watched his news conference, and he kind of made a joke about it.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah, it was like, you know, he was going to talk to the general manager and also the coach, but he said, well, you know, if you offer me 2-year contract, I signed it. So, you know, and then he laughed, but, you know, there could be some truth behind that.
Did you see the video that he and Evgeny Malkin shot in his foyer with his boys playing hockey in the house?
I didn't. No.
Oh, it's so great. So when Pittsburgh came to town for the last home game of the season, Malkin, being Russian as well, came over for dinner at Ovi's house, his wonderful mansion. And it's Malkin and his boys, Ovi and his boys, and they're playing full-on hockey with a street hockey puck in their hallway of this probably $10 million home. And they were just having the greatest time. There's, you know, one of the wives had a baby in her arms and was walking past like no big deal. It's the kind of thing where had we done this as kids growing up, our dads would have screamed at us, don't do that in the house. You're going to ding up all of the floorboards. But for Ovi, it's like, no, go play hockey in the hallway. It's good. It's fun. Yeah.
I read where Mark Cuban, before he got married, bought a mansion because if you're a billionaire, you
Why not?
Buy a mansion. And right. He like didn't buy any furniture and had to, like, his great room there set up like this big Nerf ball basketball court. And he and his buddies used to play like full court Nerf ball in his living room.
Big house, cool. No furniture. Go figure. Yeah. Yeah. All right. The Commanders unveiled their redo uniforms this past week, which are like the Super Bowl era with a few small differences, not that you could really tell. And there's not any mention of the word Commanders in any of the uniforms. And the new alternate logo has a spear through the taco holder W. It'll only appear on their alternate all blacks, but I give the floor to you. Do you like it?
I do. There's pushback from Native American groups, which is
one group, Andy.
It's to be expected.
A group and, that is professionally dedicating to being offended, just for the record.
Well, and Mark Klaus, the new president of the team, said, you know, we're not going to be able to please everybody. But he also said it was a step towards who knows what it's going to be. But I don't rule out the possibility that logo gets on to the regular uniforms within a couple of years.
The spear, the non-American, not a non-Indian spear. This would be a Roman spear. Romans did use implements that are like spears. I've looked it up. It's called.
I think that the bigger question is for you who have checked out because you don't like the name. But is the logo enough of a, hey, Steve, come on over here. Let me want to see this, you know.
Listen, it's a great throwback to what once was the team. The color palette of the burgundy, the gold, and the white hits. You're like, that tastes good. It's a good, simple uniform. They don't do a bunch of dumb, funky shit. Like the Commanders uniforms had halftone numbers. So,
well, you know who designed those uniforms?
Who?
Tanya Snyder.
No, she didn't.
Yeah, she did. She had a successful fashion business when they met. She had her own business. It wasn't like, you know, she married him, although I don't know why anybody would marry him other than for money, but she apparently was successful herself, and she designed the uniforms. I think she even designed the logo, which they're keeping, but I think everything else they'd like to clean out.
Oh, the logo. There's just the flat talk, the two-dimensional taco holder W. I just don't get it, for God's sakes. But by the way, the Romans used something called a pilum, P-I-L-U-M. It was a heavy 7-foot-long javelin-type spear designed for throwing at close range, 10 to 25 meters, just before engaging with a broadsword. Featured a small pointed tip attached to a long, thin iron shank. Okay. I think what they're doing is smart. What they're doing is they're advancing, Andy, like an army. They're gaining ground, and they're advancing, holding ground, and they're circling now the city, and they're going to wait. They've advanced. They got the old uniform back. They got a spear on one of their helmets. Advance, hold territory, wait.
Name's not coming back, though. Name is not.
I hope you and I are still doing this podcast someday, and it does, and I will pack it up your ass so hard, it'll be so funny. I'll be like, boop, boop, doop, 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 mister, not going to happen. You can never say never, Andy.
Not
never say never. You don't know how
the sides are going to go. I'm not ruling out, although I think there's a very small percentage, that the old helmet logo comes back.
The Blackie Wetzel designed
1972
white calf image. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the that was part of the deal to get the deal through the Senate for DC to control the land, which made the deal possible to build at the RFK site. It was a senator from Montana named Steve Daines who was representing the Wetzel family and said, we need to have recognition. Now, he wasn't asking that the logo be put back on the helmet, but he wanted some recognition that it was done, so they have a display at the stadium for that now. Right. But, you know.
I will buy, if I find one at Lids, I will buy a black taco holder W with the spear through it.
It's available.
Well, have you checked? Have you been to a Lids today?
No, but I see online that's particular.
No. I'm not ordering it online, Andy.
It has to be at Lids.
Well, it has to be in a store, and here's the reasoning why. It has to be on a whim purchase. Like, if I go order one online, first of all, I want to see who makes the hat. Is it a 47 brand hat that's a low slouch? Is it a New Era? Like, I want to see it, feel it. I want to put it on my big, dumb, bald lid and see dome and see how it looks. But secondly, I feel like if I order it online, it's too much of a commitment. And it feels like I'm doing something that is a commitment other than just picking it up on a
week. You try hats on in the store? They allow that?
Yes.
And
my head is not covered with slime and bugs.
But you might have lice on there. You might have some type of communicable disease.
Sure.
Oh, well, sure. I don't buy hats. I get hats for free and they come in the box or whatever.
So. Yeah, it's not like you're buying underwear off the rack where some other dude has tried it on. It's a hat, Andrew.
I know, but some people have, you know, like bad dandruff and they have, you know, infections in their scalp, you know.
All right, then there's this. The Washington Post posted a job opportunity in which they were looking for somebody to be a national sports reporter that is interested in merging sports coverage with current affairs, societal trends, and politics. In other words, the very same job they got rid of just 3 months ago.
And gee, where can
idiots?
There's no other place you can find somebody like that. Only like 30 of them at like ESPN.com and SI.com. You know that, and they've actually hired a woman to be the beat writer for the Nationals. And I still have access because even though I canceled my subscription, it doesn't run out until July. So I just checked it. The Nationals played a road game last week. I forget where it was. She didn't go. So there's no byline, dateline from where she was. And the quotes that she used were from the television post game show. What a freaking joke. That's in the Washington Post. And if you're going to establish yourself as a national writer, you're going to go to a place like that? Forget it.
Yeah. All right. Then there's this. Only in Boston tweeted out, Nike put up a Boston Marathon sign on Newbury Street that read, runners welcome, walkers tolerated. After major backlash for pace shaming, they took it down and apologized.
You know, that's a part of the running community, which I'm not familiar with.
You're not supposed to pace shame?
I don't know. It just it's not part of my sister does some running, but not competitive running. She does a little mini triathlons and stuff. I guess I could ask her if there is that sort of thing.
Do you think there's a rivalry between the walking community and the running community.
I think it's more like, oh, but if you're a serious runner, you buy Nike, you know, and the rest of them buy, like, you know, Dr. Scholl's or whatever. I don't know.
Dr. Scholl's? Those are inserts, Andy. They're not shoes.
Well, don't they sell shoes too?
Dr. Scholl's? No, I don't think so.
But they did.
Have you seen Nike's stock price lately?
I don't know. Is it up?
Nike is in dire financial straits right
now. Why is that?
Their stock price has completely tanked, and there's a lot of theories as to why that is. One of the theories is that NBA players aren't as popular as they once were amongst the casual sort of everybody knows. I mean, the real hoop heads know Jokic and SGA and guys like that, but they're not culturally at the same level they once were. Other people are saying, no, they've made shitty shoes that are way too expensive for way too long, and they've gotten comfortable and they've lost their way. But Nike's stock price is so bad that they're in a crisis right now as a company.
Because I know Steph Curry left Under Armour and went back to Nike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for many years, I guess that the brand was supported by Jordan, who has his own, like,
spinoff, you
know, Jumpman part of it. But yeah, Michael Jordan played his last game 23 years ago.
Okay.
So, you know, is the youth buying Jordan related products? I don't know. I mean, and they also sponsor the NFL, Nike. They do the uniforms for them.
They do. But their shoe business is hurting right now.
Well, the big problem with NFL is that relatively few people buy football cleats. Almost everybody buys, you know, some form of sneakers, running shoes, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. How many pairs of sneakers do you own?
I own, let's see, well, including the ones that are, like, you know, for working in the outdoors and the mud and, you know, that sort of stuff.
You're laying down your three bags of mulch?
Yeah. I mean, these are the ones that have been sort of worn. I probably have five or six, but for daily use, I have like two.
Can I guess the brand? Your favorite? Go ahead. Can I guess
the favorite brand
of shoes, sneakers that you wear out for a walk?
Well, here's the thing with me. I have a 4E foot. You know, it's almost like a snowshoe.
And 4E is wide.
Really wide.
Yeah.
And
you're a middle-aged Jew. Well, of course you've got a wide shoe.
No, not all Jews have wide feet. That's a myth.
That's a myth. Okay. You're a middle-aged man. How about that?
It's heredity. My grandfather had, my father actually had narrow feet. Okay. His father had wide feet, so it must have skipped a generation.
All right.
So for many years, the only brand I could really buy was New Balance.
New Balance.
And some of these other brands have gotten into it now. So I actually have a pair that I use most of the time that I really like. It's Under Armour. They made wide shoes.
Really?
Yeah. And then I have a pair of Pumas that are also wide.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Have you tried On Clouds? On Cloud is a brand that is really coming on.
No. And I have not done Hoka, but I understand that's Hoka's also
another one that's on the come. I also tell anyone who will listen, if you don't get some Skechers slip-ins, not slip-ons, where you literally don't even have to touch the shoe because it's got a reinforced heel, you just slide your foot in without even bending over, you are missing out. Skechers slip-ins are fun.
Are you that lazy that tying your shoe is a chore?
Andy, you call it lazy. I call it efficient. I calculate that I will have saved almost a full day and a half of shoe putting on by the time of 96 years old. That's all efficiency right there.
If that can add up to years in your life, God bless you. I would say this about the shoes. I come from a generation where in high school or even middle school, there were two levels. There was Chuck Taylors. Mm-hmm. They were $10. Most people wore Chuck Taylors. If you were a really high-level basketball player, you might be able to talk your dad into Adidas Superstars, which were $20. But
damn,
I was a terrible basketball player, so I wore Chuck Taylors.
All right. Well, Andy, I just want you to know I spread 65 bags of mulch.
By yourself?
Saturday, by myself. After playing 18 holes of golf and walking all 18.
Well, how long did it take you for the bag?
3 hours.
Man.
And let me tell you, I was a hurting pup.
I'll bet.
That night, and then the next morning, even after getting a decent night's sleep, I'm like, I don't feel very frisky this morning. But I thought of you and your three bags of mulch, and I said,
Five bags.
I was like, I need to work towards Andy's five, because 65 is way too fucking
big. The first thing you have to do is move.
Yeah.
When you live in a 10-acre estate versus a townhouse, there's a big difference in mulch.
I need to aggressively look at mulch beds that we can eliminate and just say, we're not doing mulch here anymore. Because there's so many little shrubberies and areas around the house that add mulch.
I'll tell you, the part of it is I used to do more. There's two strips on the side of the staircase to go up to the house.
He just gave that up and said, screw it, let grass grow in there?
There were too many weeds that were making their way through.
Okay.
So last year, I decided I bought the thing you put down, like it's like a burlap thing.
Weed barrier.
Yeah, and then I bought bags of stones.
Oh, so you put rocks. You got rocks
on top. Yeah, there's still some that are really pesky that are sneaking through, and I have to pull them, but not as many as before. Yeah. So the mulching there was not effective. But the beds around the shrubbery in front, that's where I spread the five bags of mulch.
Yeah. Okay, well, good to know. And I know some friends who have aggressively gone to the rock plan when it comes to their landscaping around their house. Because once you get that weed barrier down and the rocks, all you have to do is pluck the stray weed or two, and then you're not putting down mulch every year. So
yeah, well, I'm just amazed at how strong some of these weeds are. They're not giving up. They're fighting their way through the rocks. Yeah, and I said, come on, get out of here.
And there's all different kinds. There's some that have deep roots that are hard to get out. Some come out easily. Some are stringy like grass. You got your wild onions, which are very hard to pull out because the stem breaks easily. You got to dig them out. And there's actually a small onion under there, which if you're a real hippie, you can eat those things. Ugh, disgusting.
Grocery store, it's fine.
Got your crabgrass. You got your dandelions, Andy.
Yep.
You got all kinds of shit down there. All right, Andy, as always, a pleasure, my friend. We will talk next week.
Bye, Zabe. Take care.
I'll end today on some feedback, and I always appreciate it, at zabe@yahoo.com. Tom Poindexter writes me the following. Podcast quality. Zabe, I just finished listening to your Table podcast from Vegas. And while a great idea, I suppose, with those three guests, the end product was close to awful. Listening to all four of you constantly talk with food in your mouths almost made me turn it off. I'm writing this email because you constantly give Scott Lynn and other guests grief about their audio quality. Yet with this podcast, you didn't even acknowledge or apologize before playing the recording. And this was behind the paywall. I also listened to you on Scott and Solly's podcast where you are clearly eating often. Often is not true. I've occasionally eaten on their podcast, and you're right, it's fucking rude. I should not do that. And when you were on with Sheehan, you were either clearly on your speaker or talking through your Mac microphone. Okay, Tom, I'm going to let you in on some inside baseball. This is how Sheehan does his interviews. I've offered Kevin to jump on via StreamYard or Riverside, or any of these platforms, through my microphone and my Rodecaster Duo miniature studio mixer, which has audio processing and things such as Big Bottom and noise gate suppression and SFX harmonics that you can apply to the microphones to give a richer, better radio voice. I've offered. Sheehan does not do it that way. He just wants it on the phone. And I have said to Sheehan multiple times when I've been on his podcast, I've said, okay, how does this sound? No, not good. Okay, I'll take it off Bluetooth. I'll actually hold the phone to my face. This is how he does it. Okay, Tom? My point is, I appreciate your standard of quality, but I'd like you to be consistent with your standards. When it's someone else's show, you appear to not care. And when it's your show, you usually will at least apologize or acknowledge when you know it's below your standards. But the one you put out on 417 was garbage from a quality standpoint. I will continue to listen and hope you are a bit more aware. Thanks, Tom. Tom, I appreciate the feedback. You make some good points in here. Some. I did listen to the Tableside podcast. I ran it through the Riverside.fm audio processing, which uses what they call AI processing, and it does a pretty amazing job of improving audio from people that are not using professional microphones. This was an outdoor setting, so that was a bit challenging. I was using small lavalier mics that varied slightly in their placement on the subject's shirts. The overall sound quality and volume of the three guys were vastly different. But as I processed it, and I listened to it, I said, okay, it's not bad. I thought about the flow of the conversation. There are some things I was like, yeah, I don't know if this is working. It was a really fun dinner and a really fun conversation, and I thought it was pretty good in the moment. When I listened back to it, I realized, okay, I'd had a couple cocktails. I was feeling a bit too excited, so I was even more jumping on people than normal. I should calm the fuck down just a bit on that. Yes, you could hear the bites of food, which, because we didn't have headphones on or we're not hunkered over a microphone, we weren't as sensitive to. I should have put a strict moratorium on, hey, while we're talking for the podcast, nobody can put anything to their lips or mouth at all. But I guess the larger question that I too have, and this is where I'll take feedback on it, it's possible that my concept, my idea of, hey, if I had a dinner with X, Y, and Z, and I put mics on us, would you enjoy being a virtual part of that dinner? Would it work as an end product, as a podcast? I'm not sure it does, for a variety of reasons that I'll continue to sort of turn over in my head. I haven't had much negative feedback on how I've refined the Power Lunch at the Palm, mainly because I limit our podcast talking to when there's no food at the table, and I bring in actual microphones with actual headphones that we put on the table. Maybe that makes a difference. If you think the Power Lunches are good because the quality of the mics and the conversation and the proximity of being right there face-to-face with guys is good, let me know. If you think that too doesn't work, then that's important for me to know. I keep turning over in my head, and I've had preliminary talks about, believe it or not, a Zabecast Mobile Strike Studio 3.0, in which I have it as a mobile studio to drive somewhere where I could get a high-quality guest or two and have them in a controlled, easily set up studio environment for content creation. And every time I think about, okay, I could pay for it, and here's how I'll do it. It's a big expense. I got to insure the thing. It's in the driveway, and my wife is going to roll her eyes and go, oh, my God, another van. When are you ever going to stop? And whenever I think about, no, you know what? Screw that. I should just try to book better quality guests in person, and I could do it tableside either at the Palm or some other similar restaurant. But if the restaurant setting doesn't work for you, the listener, at the end of the line, at the end of it all, then I guess I need to know that, because maybe it doesn't work. I don't know. But thank you, Tom, for your very unflinching criticism, which is mostly fair, but in some ways unfair, saying that I often eat on Scott and Sally's podcast, and saying that I don't give a shit about Sheehan's podcast because it sounds like I'm on my phone. That's on him, not on me. Bring it up with him. I strive, Tom. I do. I strive, and I come up short time and time again. And I once again strive to do better in the future. Such is the nature of life. Thank you for listening. Rate and review on your various podcast platforms. If you just give me a little comment and a review saying, great podcast, love it every day, 5 stars. Oh my God, you wouldn't know what that does to the algorithm. And it helps boost my profile amongst the ocean of podcasts that you obviously have time to listen to. Thank you for consuming this one as part of your day, and spread the word if you can or if you want. Thanks for listening. Have a great Monday, everybody, and we will see you next time. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.